available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. Do you know there were six Pac-12 spring games this weekend? I and David are so excited to talk about each and every one of them. I'm very excited because it's in the morning on a Wednesday. I'm going to Vegas this weekend for the NFL draft. And David...
And somehow this will be the best part of your weekend.
Yes, talking about these spring games right now. David brought donuts. Now, he didn't approve of my donut choices. He asked what I like. I said maple and cream-filled. Now, he didn't get the chocolate-covered cream. You got to get the Boston cream. But it still was cream-filled. It was good.
He said one word, cream.
Cream. And he got the cream.
I asked for the cream.
Yeah, it was good. And you didn't
They gave me the cream.
You don't like either of those choices for donuts?
No. No. You're getting donuts. You get like the basic like four that exist. You don't go outside the scope. You don't like branch out. You just get the basic four. If you're getting a dozen and you just want to get like the mixed medley and you want to try a maple or whatever, that's fine. Mm. But no.
Maple's so good in the morning. And then, but I do like your sprinkles. I do like the sprinkles one.
Who doesn't like a white sprinkle?
They're good. The pink sprinkles, like the Homer Simpson ones, those are good too.
I mean, they're the same, right?
Yeah, but it's just a different, it's like a different colored M&M. Like you kind of like certain ones.
That's true. But like a glazed donut, like that's really, there's a reason why like Krispy Kreme just does those.
Yeah, they're really good. But anyway, so Dave actually contributed. He brought donuts to the studio. We're recording in the morning. And you know, we had something to celebrate. I know the spring games that Dave is excited about. But happy birthday to Herm Edwards. He turned 68 years young today. He is the oldest Pac-12 coach and the third oldest overall in FBS. Happy birthday. Many more years at the helm of Arizona State, like David says, for Herm.
10 more years.
We talk about Arizona State every show.
Yeah, it's very sad. It's very sad what's happening over there in the desert. You have a captain of the ship. And the ship is rudderless, and the captain doesn't know up from down.
68 years old, Herm, but that's good. You know, good for him. He looks great. We could all hope to look like him when we're 68 years old. If you have any questions or comments for the show, we got a bunch of questions today. Pac-12podcast@gmail.com is the easiest way to get a hold of us. You can email us there. You can call or text us at 424-532-0679. I think we got a text today, David. No voicemails, so we'll take a little break from that. You can tweet us at Pac-12 Podcast, the website Pac-12Podcast.com, over on the Reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions to chat with your fellow POC listeners. Our groupies, you could say, I guess. Is that what they are? You know?
Yeah, they're very much so.
Very much. And then on the Apple Podcasting app, if you would follow the Podcast of Champions, that helps us. You leave us a 5-star rating, that helps us. And you talk trash about us in that rating. Maybe it doesn't help us, but it does bring us joy. Any new ratings, David?
We do have some new ratings.
Oh, very nice.
We have one from Pudding Pie 14. 5 stars. Great pod. I've been anxiously awaiting the spring game recap of my beloved Beavs, and they delivered. What great words strung together into sentences. But always a great listen as they have a great perspective on the Pac-12 football with their usual friendly banter. I have high hopes for the new Reacher series and feel validated that they enjoyed it as well. That was just...
First of all, great name. Pudding Pie.
We like it.
I love Pudding Pie.
Here's the thing. That was... I think they were trying to be a little bit snarky, but that was just a genuinely positive review.
That was very nice.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a little thrown off. All right. Here's the next one. This is from Aaron in Utah. 5 stars. The wonderfulness of spring games and the POC. I'm currently watching the Utah spring game in pure amazement of this annual event. Ryan is 100% correct. These games are invaluable. Similar to the Podcast of Champions, priceless weekly information about everything Pac-12 football. I've been listening for several years now and finally built up enough information to qualify this podcast as one of the true elite podcasts in the world. I now look forward to David's callous yet witty sarcasm and Ryan's informative and revealing peek behind the curtain of the Pac-12. As for the spring game, only Utah plays an exhibition in a torrential downpour. You won't find that at any other Pac-12 school, especially those soft California schools. After witnessing this intense, down-to-the-last-play, better-than-a-rivalry Utah red-white spring game, Utah's obviously poised for another Rose Bowl run. Go Utes and go Podcast of Champions.
Another great review.
That was great. Two great reviews.
And they're kind of previewing our recap of the Utah spring game because it was pouring.
Yeah.
I got some good stuff there.
Oh, Thank you. I knew it was raining there, too, because I watched that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the reviews. I have some other, like, newsy clips things. Do we want to do the spring games first, or do you want to go some of the newsy stuff first? Because last week you got upset that we didn't talk about Arizona State first.
What are the news? Hang on. Let me review the doc and tell you what nothing order that's this salacious. Needs to be.
Real quick, Mark Emmert stepping down as the president of the NCAA as of June 2023. Sort of him and Larry Scott about like these 12-year runs of just terribleness. Hopefully, they find somebody to replace him. But essentially, college sports is changing. You had a dinosaur that was not willing to change at all and kind of made everything worse. So they're going to need someone that's a little bit more progressive in there that can bring the NCAA, try to keep it alive, basically, because everyone's just like shooting it with arrows and crushing it. But Mark Emmert. Stepping down.
Happy trails, Mark.
No issues there?
No, I mean, I think it's a good thing because the NCAA is a piece of shit organization. So a change in leadership feels right. But the next president of the NCAA will be the guy who oversees the death of the NCAA.
Yeah, it's true. He could make it better. Like, you could make it a more glorified death, or it could just be...
Yeah. No, go out in a blaze of glory.
Mm.
Yeah.
What are those, like the Viking death, like you're on a boat, it's just burning, like,
yeah,
you know? Is it like you burn to death and drown? Is it like double whammy? Like,
well, that's the Viking funeral.
Oh, the funeral, okay.
Right? You're already dead.
Oh, and
then they put you out on the water in the raft of sticks, and then they fire arrows at it until it immolates.
Nice.
Yeah. That's what's going to happen to the NCAA.
I love that you said emulates instead of just like
catches fire?
Yeah.
Burns?
Yeah. Let's use this. Thesaurus word instead.
Wow.
We need a Viking death for Mark Emmert, but he should be alive.
I'm very close to giving this podcast a Viking's death.
He should be alive when he's put on the boat. So the NFL draft's this weekend. Thursday's the first round. I'm going to be in Las Vegas for it. So they're doing the draft in Vegas. That's going to be a lot of fun. Four potential first rounders for the Pac-12. Kayvon Thibodeau. So he's sort of like the one that I think Bruce Feldman wrote something about him. There's a lot of mixed reviews about him. What are your thoughts on Thibodeau? He'll probably be the first.
It sounds like the reviews about him out of college are similar to like the kind of rumblings you heard out of him about him out of high school, that he kind of takes plays off and isn't 100% motor all the time.
Yeah.
Like that sort of stuff, which was the knock on him coming out of high school. So it seems relatively consistent at the very least. I know there's some Oregon fans who are like our man Kevin Wade is hitting it on Twitter quite a bit. But that it's just like this constant running litany where NFL prognosticators just doubt the Oregon guys who come into the league.
Right.
I think if you're just judging physical ability, I think there's no question he's a top of the first round type guy, like, you know, top 10 picks or whatever. But I think there's that question about his whatever motor that has kind of stuck with him now for 3 years.
Yeah. Devin Lloyd, the Utah linebacker who I gave a Heisman vote to, just his production alone came in at a 3-star. Mm-hmm. Looks like he's a potential first rounder. I think he just looks like a guy that's going to get a whole bunch of tackles in the NFL. Like, what do you want? Like, I'm going to draft a linebacker. He's going to make a shitload of tackles. Like, okay.
We've talked about that before, that linebacker, especially inside linebacker, it's one of those positions where you really do have to value production over the upside argument more than anything, and he's been insanely productive.
Yeah. I mean, if you're like, oh, he's not the fastest story. Like, the Luke Kuechly guy, like, oh, why does he have 100 and... 20 tackles a year or whatever. Like, oh, because he's just really good.
Because it's so much about positioning, reading the what the offense is doing, yeah. Like knowing everything that's going on. So
yeah, you could be super fast, but if you get blocked by every guard that pulls and you're like, oh, if you're like, if you know it's coming and you just sort of like, I take one step to the left and I'm not getting blocked by that guy, and then I go make the tackle. You know, it's just like a whole different,
yeah.
It's like an instinct kind of thing. He seems to have those instincts. Drake London, who only played 8 games last year, still, you know, didn't run the 40 in his pro day, and they delayed it like 3 times. But he caught a bunch of passes. He worked out with TJ Hushmanzada. Seems like he could still potentially be 1 or 2 as far as receivers go in the draft, and somewhere in the top 10, 15.
Seems right.
Yeah, we'll see. And then Trent McDuffie, the cornerback from UW. So he's a 5'11 guy, but just didn't. He had a lot of production, didn't allow a lot of catches to his side of the field, even though Washington struggled. You know, it seems like a guy could go in the first round.
I noticed you didn't mention UCLA right tackle Alec Anderson defensive tackle Otito Ogbonia.
Are they
wide receiver Kyle Phillips, tight end Greg Dulcich, all of whom I feel are top of the first round talents.
Really?
No.
Okay. I was going to say.
No. But UCLA actually have close? Some guys drafted. I think Dulcich is the highest rated right now.
It's tough. Like a tight end, like you better be.
But yeah, I know who's the guy? Who's the guy who does all the draft stuff?
Mel Kiper?
No, the one that you like. Daniel Jeremiah.
Oh, Derek, yeah.
He's got Dulcich as his top tight end going in.
I don't like him anymore. We're fighting. No, I'm just kidding. I haven't talked to him for a while. I should call him. Well, it's hard to call him right now because it's like his busy.
Among like many different things I don't care about, the NFL draft is really high on the list.
So. Really? Because you have a long list of shit that you don't care about.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. It's tough as a sports writer to not care about like most of the major things in the sport, but that's my cross to bear.
You're one of those guys. Like, you're not one of the people that, there's like college football writers, like more national guys.
Who like, clearly hate the sport.
Like, I think they call like Dan Wolkin that like all the time. Like, do you even like this sport? Like, what are you doing? You know, it's like,
I'm not there. It's, but there's like aspects of it. Like, people get it really, like, honestly, I'll own it. It's a little bit of the, other people are too excited about this, so I'm going to reverse course.
Yes, exactly.
Because like the people who do like mock draft after mock draft and all that kind of shit, I'm just like, this is insane, and it's stupid. Like, it's a stupid waste of time. It's like bracketologies in January. This is such a waste of anybody's time. Why are you doing this? It's stupid.
Mock drafts are, like, the worst. Watch lists for awards are the worst.
Those are stupid. Those are really, really dumb.
I don't like mock draft. Like, you're predicting, like, a team's going to make a trade, and, like, that's the problem. There's, like, all these initial conditions, and you're like starting at the top. One thing changes, like the number 2 pick gets traded, the rest of your draft is screwed. Right. Like literally, if you did a 7-round mock draft, everything's screwed.
Right.
Because the number 2 pick got traded, and now like everything changes. Like, so even if you were really good at it, like it's just so hard.
Well, and it's also like it's part of me being like too very much too on Twitter because you see all the people who are like armchair draft analysts. And this is true for both football and basketball. Like, just the people who've decided I'm like a draft expert, and so I'm going to tweet about these guys all the time and like claim that I have any idea what the hell I'm looking at when I'm evaluating these guys. And there's just so many of them. And then all these people are like citing these random people on Twitter, and it's just like, this is just it's a human centipede of just like bullshit upon bullshit upon bullshit about what is basically a restriction on free market labor. Like, that's all we're talking about when talking about the NFL draft and the NBA draft, is that we're doing is needlessly restricting the wage earning potential of these incredible athletes.
All right, I don't agree with you on those, but it's really hard.
Do you think billionaires need a salary cap?
The salary cap, I don't really. I mean, I think you can get
so all right, but
get
rid like, of that first stuff.
But the draft,
pick,
I get it because it's so a company. Like,
weak draft or good draft, the first round pick is getting the same. He's locked in, right? At that salary level. You think that's cool? So you favor a system where everyone gets paid the same?
No, I don't like that. Like, yeah, like that's...
You favor union wages.
But
that's
I don't
interesting,
like,
Ryan.
There's certain things you like and certain don't like. Baseball's a little too crazy. Like, you need some sort of guardrails because you could just, you know, the Yankees can just buy whoever they want all the time. And that's just the Dodgers are doing it. But I don't like the NBA stuff is way too restrictive because it's like you can't trade anybody because their contract just sucks. And like, it's not like a person for
person. NBA is really complicated. Like their whole system is, it's all about, you know, you got to balance out the contracts unless there's this situation where it's like an exemption based on this X, Y, and
yeah.
Z. But then the NFL's is so hard. Like it's a hard cap.
And then the Ben Simmons thing, you're like, that guy's making like $120 million for 3 years. He's like not playing. You know, like there's stuff like that too. You're like, oh my God. So I don't know. I'm not like, I think there's a lot of things you could fix probably, but it's the collective bargaining agreements, the unions, all that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But anyway, what were we talking about?
You're in favor of unions. That's what I heard there.
I have no, not. Draft. Yeah. So it'll be fun to see how that all comes down. We have 24/7 Sports put out. This is from...
Are you going to sign a mock draft right now?
Brad Crawford. No, not a mock draft. This is a post-spring 24/7 Sports poll for 2022. So this is basically like a preseason poll, but now we've seen spring football. Three Pac-12 teams made it. You got number 18, USC. You go up to number 12, and you got the Oregon Ducks and Land Danning. And you go up to number 6, and you got the Utah Utes. So Utah Utes been getting a lot of top 10 preseason love. So they'll definitely be a top 10 team going into it. But any thoughts on that, David Woods?
No, sounds about right.
Seems about right. Yeah,
yeah. I think they did a pretty good job with that.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty well done. The last topic I had, and we don't necessarily have to talk about it, but the transfer portal is a big deal. May 1st is the deadline for people to enter the portal. If you enter the portal by May 1st, then you can transfer somewhere. You don't have to pick where you transfer, but you can transfer somewhere and be eligible to play in 2022.
Okay.
John Wilner did a piece this week about the winners and losers in the portal. For winners, he had Arizona. He got Jaden DeLora. Cal got the Jake Plummer kid from Purdue. Oregon, he had a winner, got Bo Nix. USC got Caleb Williams. Utah, Mahamoud Diabate from Florida, the linebacker. And he has Washington State as a winner. They're getting Cameron Ward, the quarterback, who looked really good. And the losers, he had Arizona State, who lost a lot of people. Colorado, same thing. He had Oregon State as a loser, Stanford as a loser. They lost a bunch of people. The Bruins, your Bruins he had as a loser. And the Huskies, also a loser. So plus minus, I guess, with the portal stuff. Any thoughts on any of that?
Well, so the tough one for me is, again, I didn't and will not and refuse to pay attention as Ryan talks about spring games and spring practice.
Yep.
So my focus is primarily UCLA, as that's the spring that I actually paid attention to. And I would say paid attention to is like air quotes. But I think Wilner's looking at the transfer portal thing on 247 and just kind of eyeballing it.
Sure.
I would say just off of UCLA alone, I would call it a break even.
Okay.
I think they've lost a lot of numbers. But what they brought in with, in particular the Murphy twins, Jalen Davies is going to be a two deep guy. Jacob Sykes is more than likely going to be two deep. He hasn't yet come in. Raekwon O'Neal is going to start this summer once he comes in. Hearn is a starter cornerback. Titus Mokiel Atamalala is a first-string receiver right now. And Darius Muasau is going to be a first-string inside linebacker. So I think it's at worst break-even for UCLA right
okay.
now.
Okay. If you read what Wilner wrote, it sounds like he's – thinks it's more of a break-even thing. There was 18 guys, a lot of defensive players left. Jerry Arzenaro, you know, gone. But, you know, they got some good guys to replace them, too.
Yeah, no, I think Wilner does a great job. I don't think it's much better than break-even, but I think I'd probably tilt it a little bit more towards the positive than negative right now.
Yeah, and, like, you know, like Washington, obviously, coaching change. When you get a coaching change, there's going to be a lot of turnover. Arizona, he has up there. They lost a lot of guys, but And like USC lost a lot of guys, but if you lost a lot of guys that aren't big contributors, that's one thing. You're sort of like cleaning out the roster a little bit. Seems like that what Jed Fish was doing. Lincoln Riley did a little of that. Now you lose some guys that you don't want to lose, but are there bigger additions than subtractions? So we'll see. I think this is something we can look at again after May 1st or even later on. Like once May 1st happens, like there's some rumblings that like there's more Arizona State guys that could go in the portal. There's some rumblings. You know, we talked about those guys last week. You know, there's some Washington guys that could potentially go in the portal. You know, with the you know the new coach there. So we'll probably hit the portal a little harder, kind of going forward. Because there's going to be some more attrition and more movement. Absolutely. And things like that. All right. Well, it's time to get to the spring games. Your favorite part and my favorite part. And
I'm
I know
so excited.
David's favorite part. So we're going to start off with
UCLA Bruins.
Well, why isn't that it looks like it should be on.
What happened?
I'm going to try that again. So try on the board.
UCLA Bruins.
Can you hear it?
Yeah, I've got it.
Oh, okay. I think my behind the scenes stuff. I don't think my headphones are working, but yeah, that's the Bruins side. So you can hear that.
I heard the whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you if anything goes wrong.
Thanks, because I should be wearing headphones.
Can you hear me right now?
I mean, I can hear you because you're in the room.
Is it sound muffled?
No, I can hear you like through, yeah, whatever. Well, anyway, I know the sounds are working.
How long are we in? 20 minutes and you're just now realizing your headphones aren't working?
Yeah. Well, okay. We didn't really, good thing we don't have any voice messages.
Yeah, but I have to sound muffled to you because you've got big ass headphones over your ears.
That is true. All right. Well, anyway, let's get into the Bruins. Spring showcase.
Spring thing.
It's though I don't even know it was a thing because like it was literally it was a practice. It wasn't the last practice. They did it on a day. They televised a regular UCLA practice on a day that there was five other Pac-12 spring games going on. When there's a weekend this weekend where the UCLA's practice actually ends and there's only two spring games.
Well, and they got literally the lead analyst, I think, for the Pac-12 Network now. That's Yogi, right?
Yogi and Ted Robinson. Like, that's probably the number
that's
one.
That's their A-crew.
Yeah.
This was embarrassing. Like, and not, whatever, UCLA just ran a practice, but it was actively like, what the hell's going on here? Oh, wow. Something just changed with my audio because Ryan's fiddling with things.
Oh, really? Oh.
No. Now I've got it through my right ear. It wasn't coming in through my right ear, but now it's not again. This is cool.
Keep going.
No, I'm loving this. So this was, I mean, it was just a waste of everyone's time who wasn't actually on the team. They held a spring, quote, showcase at 9 a.m. on Saturday. About, I would say, 1,500 UCLA fans showed up, which was kind of amazing given that UCLA did basically nothing to promote it aside from a couple of emails. And then I think Chip Kelly's commentary and everything we published beforehand actively discouraged people from coming because it was going to be a practice. It was never going to be anything other.
Yeah.
And then it truly was. Like, I thought, okay, they're saying it's a practice. It's going to be a practice, but they're still going to put together like three straight scrimmage periods. No. It went period to period the exact same format as their regular practices. Down to in the middle of the second hour when things are finally like, you know, your interest level is rising just a little bit higher because they've done like two straight team periods. You're like, ah. And then they do eight straight minutes of special teams blocking drills.
Wow.
It was insane what they did. It was a waste of everyone's time. I think it's yet another sign. And look, I don't think spring games matter. I think I'm on record as saying that. But in as much as they do matter, it's for marketing, it's for selling season tickets, it's for getting people interested in the program in the offseason. I can remember my brother and his friends with season tickets. My brother was like 12 years older than me. They would, like, spring game was their, like, off-season thing. Like, we go to the spring game, we tailgate beforehand, we, you know, hang out, we do the whole thing, and there'd be like 9 or 10,000 people there at Drake Stadium. Now it's dead. No one's there. And there's no effort to turn it into any kind of event. There was no MC. There was nothing going on telling you what was happening during the practice. It was loud, blaring music with the bass set way too high, a bunch of cornhole up on the top concourse, a really nice tent setup, but only for the Wooden Athletic Fund donors, and just everyone baking in the sun watching a practice.
Wow. So Chip Kelly doing work there. He's
it just it's whatever. I mean, you can blame Chip, but the reality is somebody's got to tell him what to do with stuff like that.
So in his defense, when he was getting interviewed by Yogi, by the way, I don't know if it was the camera angle. Yogi looked like he was a giant compared to Chip. So
I think they're roughly the same height, so I don't think that's right.
It was like literally it like he was, you know, closer to the camera, but he looked
because Yogi's what, like 5'10", 5'11"?
Yeah.
And Chip's roughly the same. He's like 5'10".
Okay. Well, he looked like a giant. He must have been standing on a box or something. It like looked that different on the broadcast. But Chip said that you could lose out on some situations when you play a game. You know, maybe you don't get as much red zone work. So you're trying to, you know, work on everything. So, you know, he's trying to give the players the best experience possible. Like a game, you lose out some stuff, you know. Like,
well, honestly, for the first time ever, I got a little bit of an almost embarrassed vibe from him in the post game interview that he did for like just the local media, because he immediately started talking about, and this was, you know, this was just our 12th practice. This was just another practice for us. But like in this way where he wasn't even asked about it, like really in that way, but he was already like pre-justifying it. Cause I think he felt it a little bit. Like you've got TV cameras there, you've got interviews going on, and you're just,
You purposely tried to make it late.
Yeah, you're running like the thing is like at practice on Tuesday, like yesterday, they did some cool stuff at the very end. They did 2-minute drill where they were trying to work up the field to get a field goal from, you know, their own 20 or whatever in like 35 seconds. Well, here's how we're going to do it. If you had just done that for an 8-minute period and then done another period of, you know, pure red zone drills or whatever it is, that at least is giving you a feel. But the thing is, they weren't stringing them together. They were formatting it exactly the same as like a regular practice. So it was individuals, then on-air stuff, then team stuff. It never got in a rhythm for people who were actually watching for that sort of stuff. For my purposes, it didn't matter because it's the same sort of practice I'm always watching. But for like getting people interested, getting people excited about anyone, like any individual at all, it didn't do the job.
You weren't selling it at all. Chip was really praising Jake Bobo, the wide receiver transfer from Duke. He's probably going to be the number one guy. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's I think he's been good, but I think it's also just the changeover at that position. They've lost some guys, and so he makes sense. He's got a lot of experience, a big body, catch the ball in traffic.
Yeah. I loved hearing Ken Norton Jr. I mean, I covered him when he was at USC. He was really fired up. So
he's been one of my favorite assistants so far in spring. He's a lot of fun to watch coach.
He's fun.
He's really, really engaged, really fired up. And like, I mean, it's obviously, but like just so positive, like, but in like that, I'm going to kick your ass positive kind of way.
It's not like I'm going to kick your ass. It's like I'm really fun, but I'm going to kick your ass. Yeah, like, he's a great person.
No, you're going to redo that, but you're going to do a great job this time. but it's he's fun.
When I heard Jerry Neuheisel, I was like, is he doing an impression of his dad?
It's insane.
Like, he
was formed via mitosis. It was not... It was not a regular
this
human
is like
pregnancy.
Boba Fett kind
of thing. Yeah, no, this was cloning. Clone? Like they took some cells and they made him in a petri dish. It is nuts.
I thought it was a joke. I'm like, wait, that's what he sounds
oh
like.
Oh my god!
It's
yeah.
like holy shit. He's just trying to sound like. Is this if you were doing an impression of your dad? Like that's what it would sound like.
Yeah,
it's him.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. It is freaky.
And he didn't have gloves, so I don't know what the. Martin Jarmond, the athletic director, talked a little bit, but he said, and I thought I quoted this for you on Twitter, the best is yet to come for Chip. So I think he's ready to pull the trigger on an extension. That's what I felt. Is that what you felt hearing it?
If I was Martin, I just wouldn't say stuff like that. I think there's a way to be like not I'm not engaging with you, Ryan, on this, but there's a way to there's a way to support your head coach without potentially scoring own goals like that.
Okay.
You know, why deliver a quote like that that could be just repeatedly thrown back against you for the next year or two as he goes like 8-4 and then 6-6?
All right. Well, this one was 9 a.m. And my apologies. Last week when I was previewing the spring games, I missed Colorado and Washington State. They weren't listed on the Pac-12 network feed when I put this doc together. But next up, so that was 9 a.m. Then at 11 a.m. they had
Utah Utes.
The Utes. It was actually a spring game. This was okay. This was the most spring games of all the spring games. Like this was the most game of all the spring games. It was White beat red 21-14, right on the number. It was a 7-point spread, so they Vegas nailed this one. Roxy Bernstein, Steven Sylvester, former Utah player, but the quarterbacks outside of Cam Rising were live.
Hell yeah, baby.
You could tackle the motherfuckers. Yes. I was like, damn. Pouring down rain, hail. One of the
most Utah-ass spring game was, you could imagine. I forget what it was.
They were
saying.
Interviewing Junior Tafua, like the defensive lineman, Tafuna. He's got like kind of a curly hair. He's too tall to like get under the tent to be interviewed. Because it's raining. So he's standing outside getting interviewed on TV. There's hail in his hair. You can see like white pieces in his hair. It looks like, you know, huge dandruff. It's just talking or whatever. Kyle Whittingham in shorts, you know, in the pouring rain. He says he only wears shorts if it's like 20 degrees or lower. I mean, pants if it's like 20 degrees. It was very, very, very Utah.
Extremely Utah.
Yes.
Peak Utah. They're going 11-1.
We only got to see Cam Rising that first series, and I think they shut him down. He had a nice sideline pass. He was 4 for 6 on the drive and a touchdown. All of his throws were downfield. And then he was done after that. But he's the only one that had like a don't hit me jersey on. They like Jalen Glover a lot, the freshman running back from Florida. Kind of remind of him. Zach Moss, another Florida kid. So it was 7-7.5. So it was, you know, nail biter. But White came back and won 21-14. There was a touchdown taken off the books. Who was it? It was one of the backup quarterbacks had like a long run, I believe it was. And he's kind of high steps as he's about to go into the end zone. Pac-12 refs, unsportsmanlike, take the touchdown away. Now he gets a touchdown pass a little bit later on the drive, but that's very Pac-12 ref to take a touchdown away by high stepping in there. There was a lot of Rose Bowl talk, a lot of just. You feel like this was a program that's been building kind of slowly, and they're really capitalizing on making it to the Rose Bowl. It seems like recruiting stepped up, just everything they're doing, everything about the program seems to be going in the right direction. It was the point the rain was coming down so hard, it was hard to hear the interviews because they were like, just it's like pouring down rain and everything. They also said, the athletic director came on and they said they have a shitload of requests, maybe he didn't use that word, for tickets for the Florida game in Gainesville. So expect a lot of Utes to be down there in Gainesville for this one.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, but good showing. It was very spring. Like if you would have watched the game, you would probably like this one the most.
Yeah, I would have tolerated it the most because it sounds like it was actual football. But like in the same way, I mean, it has to matter, right? And this doesn't matter.
I mean, seeing like camera, they let the quarterbacks get tackled.
I have to watch UCLA for my job. It like right. behooves me to watch it. It behooves me to pay attention.
Yes.
And I still struggle with spring. Because like August practices, like if they still had those open, those I would watch pretty intently, right? Because you're leading up to the season. The shit they do in spring sometimes doesn't even matter. Anthony Barr didn't switch from offense to defense until fall camp, if I'm remembering correctly. Like sometimes just weird stuff happens in the summer. And then suddenly you're looking at a whole new thing.
Yeah. All right. Okay, next up, let's do... This was the only one that wasn't on the Pac-12 Network.
USC Trojans.
So this was kind of going on during... So I could watch the beginning of the Utah game, and then I had to switch over to watch USC. But they were over on ESPN. Big production. Kirk Herbstreit was supposed to be there. He was not, so he ends up having... He tweeted out he had like a blood clot, so he's kind of staying. He's not doing the draft coverage, so we weren't sure why he wasn't there, but that was essentially the reason why. So what's going on? So the first draft, so you have everyone wants to see some of the new transfers. Caleb Williams goes 6 for 6 on the first drive, touchdown to Mario Williams, his former Oklahoma teammate. He ended up having 2 touchdown passes. He looked good. Miller Moss, the backup, they only had 2. Scholarship quarterbacks, but they both look good. Kyle Ford.
Oh, that defense must be shit then.
In the first half, it was more offense. The second half, the defense played better. But I liked what Miller Mossy threw. My guy, Kyle Ford, the former 5-star, had like a 48-yard touchdown was there. And then some of the transfers, like Romello Height got a sack, the Auburn transfer. Shane Lee, the middle linebacker from Alabama, he was kind of all over the place. Tuli Tuilipilotu, his brother Marlon, played at USC. He had a bunch of tackles for loss. So it was just kind of fun. It was an offense versus defense. They played 2 15-minute halves. So they did like a real game for part of it. But they, unlike UCLA, they had like a huge production. Like there was, you know, games for kids. There was all kinds of like food trucks. It was like, and they had over 33,000 people there, which when I was covering the team for like Leinart and Bush and stuff in the early 2000s, you got like 10, 15,000 people. They had some in and out trucks and that was it. So they could really try to put a lot into it. And I know they were trying to like showcase it on ESPN. So I think they did a pretty good job with it. They're still going to add some dudes from the portal. There was a targeting call in the game that totally wasn't targeted. So it was only like two penalties. One of them, this guy, I think it was Latrell Blackwin. Or no, wait, I might blank on his name. Why do I, it's one of the new guys. Oh, Latrell McCutcheon. The safety comes in like shoulders into the ball carrier, like into his stomach, and they call targeting. It was completely not targeting, but they throw him out of the game. He's like disqualified. Like they announce he's disqualified in a spring game, but then he's playing like a couple plays later. But I thought it was two very Pac-12 ref moments, taking a touchdown off the board and kicking a guy out of the spring game for a targeting call that wasn't even targeting.
Wow. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's a spring game. Who cares?
Spring.
So that was, I think, that contextually, because UCLA during the Mora years, they started doing it at the Rose Bowl again, and they were able to get some crowds. Like they got, I don't think it was 33, but I think they got like 15 to 20 a couple of times.
That's good,
and it was good. Like it was, and it was a lot of fun. They did a bunch of, and Mora himself like emceed the whole thing. Like was like full on like directing traffic and saying, "Oh, now we're gonna do this."
But that shows effort. Like. You could say that's bad. I think that's good. That's effort. Like, hey, I'm trying to make this fun for the people.
It's what I call Jed Fish behavior, and we should all emulate Jed Fish in all things. And
trying?
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, UCLA just didn't try. They didn't, like, they, and the thing is, I want to separate the football program from the school because the school tried. There were, like, free muffins. There was cornhole. There was all that stuff. But there's only so much you can do if you don't have the buy-in of the football program itself.
Yes.
And I think something needed to happen there where Chip was told in no uncertain terms, this either needs to be an event or we need to completely de-emphasize it and not even do it at Drake and just have, like, an hour on the Pac-12 Network where they do some interviews and have some B-roll because this is not going to
– Yeah.
This isn't going to fly.
Yeah. All right, we've got three more. We're only halfway through. I'm so excited we get to talk about more. Next up, we have...
Colorado Buffalo.
Oh my God, you have so many notes about this. Why are there so many notes?
The Buffs. So our buddy Guy Haberman and Max Brown was on the call for this one. This one was not on like Pac-12 Networks because there was too many things going on at the same time. But they had it on Pac-12 Mountain. This is the 99th season over at Folsom Field. So beautiful. And Ralphie ran. And she is bigger. Remember last year, Ralphie just wasn't that big? Ralphie's much bigger. It was very... so we don't have to go over all this stuff. But I do have a lot of notes for Colorado. Carl Durrell, it was so funny. Listen, I want to get your thoughts on this. This is real. So he was talking about mission accomplished for what happened in the spring. He was happy with the progress of new offensive coordinator Mike Samford, even though, you know, they got shut out by Minnesota and Minnesota still fired him. And he's now Colorado's offensive coordinator, like literally. So he likes his versatility because he can coach drop back passers and dual threat guys. So it was like the stuff he was saying are like, so he's not really good at anything, but he's okay at coaching either one. So like if you're not sure which direction you're going to go, like you have a drop back, you have a dual threat guy, he could coach them both. So that's good. So he said that they tweaked some things on defense. He was like, yes, it was something along the lines of like, yes, we lost some talented guys, but now we have more depth because the other guys are about the same, you know, like, so we lost our good players, but now the guys that are left are all pretty equal. So now we have more depth. Like, literally, that's what he was saying. Like, do you know, yes. That's what I got the impression. Like, so, okay, so your best players are gone, but now everyone else is pretty even. So like, that's good. Like that's somehow a positive. It was unbelievable. Like,
that's sort of what he did to UCLA too. Like, if we bring the talent level to below average by Pac-12 standards, we're going to have a ton of depth because it's going to be three deep of just mediocre Jags.
I didn't get it. Like, I'm like, who's listening to this and going, oh, great. Oh, so your best players are gone, but now everyone's like on the same page. Like, everyone's close. So instead of having like a backup, now we have like two potential starters. Now, neither one of them are as good as the guy that left, but but we have two. Like, I was like, are you freaking kidding me? So he was talking about the portal. He said it's challenging. Yes, it's challenging when you lose a bunch of guys. They did go back to, he held a football school. So guys in classrooms, like literally going back to the basics, emphasized how important walk-ons are, you know, because when your depth is moving, when your best players leave, you need those walk-ons to fill in and be like, I didn't quite get it. I like Rick
Jordan. Oh, no, I think you get it. I think you do understand.
But why?
I think you understand what's happening, and I think the Colorado fans, the few who can stomach this or who are listening, also understand what's going on.
I feel really bad. But, like, Rick George I like as an athletic director, but I'm not sure what's going on here. But he says he likes the energy of the coaching staff. He says there's high expectations, which I just don't get. He said there's a young, energetic staff that recruits well. He doesn't like the collectives, but they might get one soon, what he was talking about. So Brendan Lewis is still there, but JT Shrout, who was injured last year, he's the more like he's got the most arm talent. It sounds like there's going to be a competition, but he only got to do like 7-7 and stuff. So I think in the fall, if you really just need if Mike Sanford wants a pocket passer, it's going to be with Shrout. But they all felt that Lewis looks like a better quarterback now. They didn't have a whole lot of healthy guys on the offensive line. They did get a transfer, RJ Sneed from Baylor, who looks like their best receiver. So I guess similar to UCLA, you got a transfer that might be your number one starter. They didn't really keep score, but I don't remember seeing any touchdowns for quite a while. So that was sort of like a bad thing. Then their walk-on running back scored a couple times. Darrell at the end said he made a mistake not recruiting his own team after the season. That's something he would do again. I mean, obviously the guys you lost to the portal, but it helped with your depth. And so there was some scoring, but it was all late when they were doing some red zone stuff. So the beginning of the thing when it was like team stuff, I didn't see the offense score. So that's sort of like what we saw last year. That's my takeaway from it.
Carl Durrell is 58 years old. He's been a coach for a long time.
Yeah.
He made a mistake not recruiting his own team after the season. Won't do that again.
We love you guys in Colorado, but if you guys watched that broadcast, like, tell me I'm wrong. Like, tell me, like, you didn't hear him right. Like, he said other things than what you heard because I was, like, scratching my head. Like, that's why I had to write the notes down. I'm like, wait, he said this? He said this? Like, are you kidding me? See, you would have liked that, too. You would have, like, you should just watch the interview. You can do that on Pac-12.com.
No, thank you. No, thank you.
All right.
Why do that when I have you transcribing?
True. Where else can you get this kind of content, by the way? Nobody's freaking doing this.
Nobody's doing this.
But me, because I'm insane.
At the level you're doing it. Why is this happening?
So the thing that made it easier, we're in person today because I tested negative finally for COVID. I was fine. Last week we had to do it remote. But I was, you know, in quarantine all week. I was on the couch. So I'm watching like NBA playoffs and Pac-12 spring games. So that's what I did. I couldn't go to the USC spring game. All the spring game stuff. Lincoln Riley's first spring game. I couldn't be there because I was still positive.
That's great.
But now I'm good.
I'm happy for you.
All right.
You were able to avoid that.
Our Pac-12 North champion.
Oregon Ducks.
All the broadcasts are a little different. They have like different feels and stuff. But they usually have like former players that are involved. So Jordan Kent and Nick Aliotti and basically everyone that Oregon brought in were former guys that he had coached before. And like, hey, coach, it was just this kind of a weird feeling. It was a green versus yellow, really like an eyesore, like watching these uniforms go at each other. But they had a pretty big crowd. I think they had like 40,000 people there. When they showed Dan Lanning, he's got this long sleeve like camo shirt on. Lanning. My apologies. I actually wrote Dan Lanning. What am I doing? He had this long sleeve kind of camo shirt on. He sort of looked like an assistant strength coach. Like that's what, if you looked at him, like you don't know who that is. He's a young guy. Like, oh, that's like the assistant strength coach. Like, nope, that's the head coach. So a lot of emphasis on competing. They had DeAnthony Thomas there. They had a whole bunch of former players, Eric Armstead, guys like that. They were honorary coaches. Seven McGee looked really good. Like, he sort of would be like the DeAnthony Thomas guy. A lot of versatility. So I liked him. Let's see. Yellow team, 31-21 victory over the green team.
Are you kidding? The yellow team?
Yeah.
They won by 15 over the green team?
The green team was favored by 3.5.
Holy shit.
3.5. And, wow. And yellow won by 10.
Wow. The topsy-turvy Pac-12 already at it.
So yellow was up 14-0 on the green early. So you thought, like, wow, the odds makers really got this wrong. Green goes up 21-14. Like, Vegas freaking knows. Vegas knows. And then 31-21, yellow had a pick six in there. There were 5 turnovers in this game. I would say, like, Bo Nix, like, Thompson. Thompson, I think, had 2 picks. Butterfield had a pick. So Ty Thompson, Jay Butterfield, and Bo Nix. Bo Nix was 8 of 15, 230 yards and 3 touchdowns, but he had a really bad pick. I think Bo Nix is going to be your starter, would be my guess from watching the all-important spring game, David. But he's gonna make some mistakes. He's going to throw some shitty balls.
He's not a good quarterback.
He looked okay. But, like, he'll do some good things and do some bad things.
More like no Bicks.
I would say the defense has depth. Like, so all that recruiting that Oregon's done, it looks like there's some good guys there. And they didn't even have, like, some of their best players play. I don't think, like, the starting, like, defensive linemen are playing. But I think it's going to be a good defensive team. I think they're going to have some moments on offense, but they're going to struggle. I don't think they have any really experienced wide receivers. But my guess is it's going to be Bo Nix at quarterback. So, you know, here's the issue, though. So from the second quarter on, I think the defense dominated. Oh, they played shout, like, at the beginning of the fourth quarter. So they kind of made it more like a real game. The fans are all dancing around, you know, the Animal House kind of stuff. I thought that was good. But they think they're going to push the ball down the field more, but I think there's going to be more mistakes too. The end of this game, now it was already 31-21, so that was the final score. I missed, like, the last 3 minutes of the game. The broadcast cut off.
That's sad. How'd you handle that?
It was
spiritually and emotionally.
I threw something at the TV. So I don't know, like, I recorded the live thing, but I think sometimes Sling might record the next, the newest one, so they might not play the whole thing. I don't know. Or maybe they just ran out of time. It's the Pac-12 Networks and got cut off. But, yeah, the odds makers were wrong on this one. Oregon, the yellow or green, whoever I said, they won. Okay. but, you know, talented team. I think they'll be better on defense than offense is my takeaway from that one. And then the last one.
Washington State Cougars.
It looks like he has to, like, go somewhere. Like, he's just,
you know. No. I'm trying to have an out of body experience, but it's not working.
And he brought donuts. All right, the Cougs. This was the late one. Remember Michael Bumpus?
Yes.
Yeah, he's like the highest rated recruit ever for Washington State. But he was on the call. Ryan Leaf was on the sideline. Ryan Leaf, they threw a pass. So they were interviewing. I forget who were they interviewing. I think it was Dickert on the sideline. Like, Ryan Leaf is interviewing. He's like, "Hey, do you got a throw in you?" And so he's like warming up his arm. You know, he's a big dude. He tries to throw a pass, like this out route or something, and it's like, you know, 4 feet short. And he's like, one more, okay. And then there was like more of a comeback route, and it like barely got there. And the guy comes back and makes the catch. And it was funny afterwards. He's like, you know, you haven't thrown the ball for a while, but in your mind, you still can gun it like the way, like, he goes, "I just need to put air under it. Like, in my mind, I could still just do that, you know?" And he couldn't. Like, it's like, oh shit, it just short. Like, so it's kind of funny. It's like, yeah, like, if he would have, like, tried to put air out, but he just tried to throw it like he was a stud quarterback. He's like, he's not that. It was kind of a funny moment. This was Crimson versus Gray, offense versus defense. Cameron Ward is the guy you want to see. He had a really nice touchdown drive. Drake Owen's going to probably catch a lot of balls this time around. I mean, this year. He was wide open in the end zone. He's funny to watch. If you saw any of his tape, he's like a kind of Patrick Mahomes-y with, like, the arm angles. Like, if he's just sort of moving to his right, like to his side, he might huck it like sidearm or three-quarter. He's coming from all different angles. But he's fun to watch. He's probably going to make some mistakes and stuff too. But so he looked good out there. The other quarterbacks threw some picks. They have tight ends. They're going to use tight ends.
Damn.
Yeah.
What are we calling this offense?
I mean, it's a offshoot of the air raid, but it's not Mike Leach's air raid.
Right.
They will actually use tight ends. They're going to be more run game focused. Like, and I saw this with USC too. Like, you saw guards and tackles like pulling and like leading for the run game. They're not. It's not just like kind of zone blocking stuff. They're going to do the same kind of stuff. You know, pulling their guards. You know, trying to get the run game going as well. They have a left tackle, Jake Wilson, who is 6'11". He was an Idaho basketball player. Tried out for, like, he went to become an intern at Washington State. And they're like, you should play football. And so he could be their starting left tackle. They did use a lot of tempo. The Cougar defense, do you remember what they were famous for last year, what they did well?
No.
Turnovers. They forced a lot of turnovers. Mm-hmm. Same thing. They did a lot of that stuff there. So it's kind of that's good. I mean, because, you know, Dickert's still there, right? So, you know, forcing some turnovers. There's a new Wazoo philosophy. I don't even know what that is, but that was a little buzzword thing. And then they probably had the weirdest scoring system. It was basically like defense got points if you got any kind of stop. If they got they had a couple like defensive turnover, I mean, touchdowns. So I think they got points that way too. But the defense was up big. And then there was a final TD bomb at the very end that the offense won 56-51. So I like the scoring the best. It was good. Cameron Ward didn't like it. They were talking about the scoring. He's like, but I'm like, well, you were getting stopped. So like, give the defense points. If you don't score points, the defense should get points. So it was a lot of scoring. It was a lot of fun. It was a good one. But you wouldn't see Cameron Ward.
I'm excited for you.
Yeah. All right. So next week, what do we got? We got the Cal Spring Game. They call it a spring game. And the Washington Spring Preview, which that means it's going to be lame, I think.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like my kind of shit right there. That sounds like the UCLA thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love it.
So it could be one of those things.
I hope it's just them, like, literally parading the players out there and, like, giving some biographical details, and they don't even have a practice.
So I just talked to you about 6 Pac-12 spring games that I watched.
Uh-huh.
And I'm freaking giddy.
I can't. I thought about getting up and going to the bathroom in the middle of the Colorado one.
But I tried to find the stuff that you would care about, like what Carl Durrell said. Like, you're going to have to comment.
I was able to engage with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I tried to, you know, I wanted you to be involved.
Not a lot of meat on that bone, but we
the stuff he said, like, just go watch it. You're like, but I mean, you would believe it because
it's Carl.
All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back and answer questions. All righty, we're back here on the Podcast of Champions. I feel like I'm going to Vegas, so it's going to be fun, but I don't know if I'm going to have more fun than talking about Pac-12 spring games that we just did. After I had a couple donuts, talk about Pac-12 spring games. Like, what could be better?
I mean, I can think of a few things. Like, just off the top of my head, I can think of a few things, and I think if you gave me a little bit of time, I could think of a lot more.
All right. Let's see. Where are we starting with? I think we're starting
at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start.
Yeah. I've been doing a lot of talking. You got to do some talking.
Where are we? We are at,
I think we're the 22nd Friday. Is it the Payne one?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, we omitted. All right. So somebody noted that we omitted the Washington State spring game from our discussion.
I did that. And then people pointed that out on Twitter, and then I added it to the content item, but we didn't get to talk about it.
Nobody goes to our website, so that was probably too little and too late.
But I also mentioned at the top of this show, you know.
Yeah, that it had already happened.
Right.
That they didn't. So if the dedicated listeners who you purport they are interested in spring games, if they were using us as their sole source of info, they were not able to watch the Washington State spring game.
I know. Well, I use the Pac-12 networks or the Pac-12 website.
Okay, so we're pointing fingers elsewhere. You just claimed that you are providing a piece of content that no one else is providing. You got to own it.
It's true. I go to the Pac-12 Network or Pac-12 mm-hmm. website this morning, and they list the Cal spring game. They don't list the Washington spring game.
Wow.
I had to go scour the internet, you know, go to dogman.com and see when the spring game was. So, because I knew there was only two left.
Look, heavy is the head that wears the crown, but it's yours to bear.
I got it right, though. I got, boom.
You didn't get it right last week, though.
No, that's true. I only got 4 out of 6.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
There we go.
So is Payne the first one?
Yeah, I'll start here. This is from Jackson. Payne. Hey, guys, I'm back again and once more convinced that Ray Anderson wants the football program at Arizona State to burn. This next season is obviously not expected to be ASU's best, but Eric Gentry and Ricky Pearsall were two of only a handful of bright spots the team had. I'm sure you guys have already discussed this on this week's episode. I haven't had the chance to listen yet, but what will this do to ASU this coming season? Another question I have now is how long it will take for ASU to get out from this disaster they are facing. Maybe since I live in Salt Lake City, now I can jump on the Utah bandwagon. Wow.
I think it's a good idea. Like, I would definitely...
If I had any connection to the Utah football program, I would have jumped on that bandwagon a long, long, long time ago.
Well, happy birthday, Herm, again.
yeah, if you're looking for positivity, Jackson, it is Herm's birthday. This only happens once a year.
Yeah.
That's positivity right there.
I don't know. I mean, I think there's some good people. I'm not saying, you know, smart people. Like I said, I like Rick George. I just don't think Carl Durrell is going to work. I mean, I think at this point, you've put so much into this Herm thing that you're not willing to get, but like, you know, David's not right a lot, but holy crap, he was right when he tweeted, "Dear Ray Anderson, the best time to fire Herm Edwards was
several months ago."
Yeah. The second best time is right now.
There's not a point where it would be a bad idea to fire him.
Yeah.
You could fire him now, go into the season with an interim, and you would feel, you know, the fan base would feel as if a weight had lifted off of them. Because everyone, I think, going into this year knows exactly what it's going to be now. It's going to be a chore. It's going to be just a trudge to the finish. And at the end of it, some major change is going to happen. Get that out of the way now.
Yeah.
Because then everyone can... Here's the thing. As a UCLA person for many, many years now, going into a season where you know that you kind of want the team to fail is really, really tough. It's a struggle. And I think every ASU fan right now, they can't feel like, oh, yeah, I can freely root for this team to win. I can freely feel like they've got it on the right track because
if they do, then
because they obviously don't. Yeah. And it's just it's if they go into it with an interim, just some dude, just some random alum or whatever the hell it is, then they could say, oh, we're just rooting for the players. We're rooting for having a good time and have a good season. And you can do it with kind of a weight lifted off your shoulders. But it's hard to do that when you know it's a dead man walking who has still the iron grip of support from Ray Anderson because they are literal professional, like they had a professional relationship before they were even there. So
coach agent.
They need a clean house. And I think if they started now, they would earn some goodwill from their fan base.
What makes you go into a season like wanting UCLA to lose? Like if you don't like if Rick Neuheisel is the head coach and you're like, I don't want this to continue.
Yeah, I'm a coaching absolutist, which makes me kind of on the psycho end of of the fan base, where if I feel like the coach is a bad fit, is not going to work out, then I'm an absolutist. I'm rooting for losses.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so say you wake up, it's early January 2nd, and so just picture this in your lifetime. UCLA had just won the Rose Bowl. That year, you're not going to root for, like, so anytime UCLA's won the Rose Bowl in your lifetime, you haven't rooted for the head coach to get fired that following year, right? Like, is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
Right.
Yeah. You want to know why?
Wait, why?
Because I was a literal baby when that happened.
Oh, good. Okay. Clay Helton won a Rose Bowl.
Yep.
Okay. Anyway. All right. Though this actually, I think there's like two of them like on the same page. I don't know if we have like listeners that are in the same household or something, but where to live. Hey guys, if you had to pick one Pac-12 city to live in and cover the team besides the schools you currently cover, where would you choose? Thanks, Ross. And he says, P.S. Love the spring ball talk. Keep it up, Ryan. Thank you, Ross. I appreciate that. We have another one. We have one that's more detailed. I think the next one. Okay. I'll just go to the next one, too, because it's going to cover the same thing.
All right.
Question for the POC. This is from Jared. Longtime listener, first-time writer. I'm moving to Oregon from Seattle this weekend, which means I have a 4+ hour drive in a U-Haul with no cruise control ahead of me. To help me stay entertained and alert on my drive, I thought I'd ask you some questions. As a Washington alum and fan that is moving to Oregon, I was curious, if you had to move to another town, city, these are back-to-back like questions, it's crazy, in the Pac-12 and become a fan for that team, which would you pick? Please rank them based on the quality of living in their city or town and having to root for that team too. To control for quality of life, let's assume your salary would be comparable to what you make now, but scaled to a new city. For example, the Bay Area, you'd make more in Seattle. You'd make about the same in LA, and in Corvallis or the Palouse, you'd be making at least $12.75 an hour, $10.50 an hour for Dave. Okay.
All right. So cities we would like to live in. Boulder's up there.
Okay, so this is, it's got to be a combo of we want to live there and we want to root for that team. I don't know how much you want to weigh. I could root for anybody.
I could root for anybody. I mean, I've...
It's going to be more about where I want to live.
Look what I've been doing.
That's true. So LA's are out. So we're not in LA.
Not in LA. So Boulder's up there.
I might go Tempe. I might go Arizona State.
You're a desert rat.
I love golf. Like,
wow.
The cost of living is pretty good. I think I might go ASU.
That's your number one, ASU.
I like going to Scottsdale. I mean, I'd live in Scottsdale and drive to Tempe, but
Either place in Arizona is like pretty close to the bottom of my list.
Really?
Yeah, very close.
Tucson might be the bottom, but like Scottsdale.
Tucson's fine.
Yeah. They have some good golf there and stuff too.
Like, I mean, I talk shit about it, but it's fine. I don't want to live someplace where it's that goddamn hot all the time.
Yeah, I mean, after a while, I might not like. I only visit and stuff, but it's definitely
so. Hot. I would much prefer it being cold and rainy than hot. See,
yeah,
and
shitty. No, I avoid the cold and rain. Like Pacific Northwest,
but like 120 degrees, I'll take 45 and rainy. That's fine.
No, I would take 120. Yeah,
Jesus, you're a desert rat.
Yeah. All right, so who's your number one?
Boulder.
Okay, so you go Boulder. You would have Arizona State low. Mm-hmm. I would have Boulder up there. It would probably be in the top three or four.
I'd probably go four. Boulder, and then I'd probably go Seattle.
I might go Salt Lake City before Seattle.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, Salt Lake City's probably in my top six.
Okay.
It's just, again, you're getting a little bit of that like kind of barren desert feel, just like very, very shortly out of town from there.
I would probably learn to ski if I was there. Definitely if I was in Boulder.
Yeah. And then, so the thing is,
but
like
Seattle would be up there.
The Bay Area, I think
that would be low for me. Like so expensive.
It's just
like,
way too goddamn expensive.
I lived there. I was in Mountain View, like when I was an engineer, you know, like in Silicon Valley, and I didn't like it.
I liked it okay.
If I lived in San Francisco, that'd be kind of fun, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, are you going to – if I have to live in, like, Berkeley or, like, if I have to live in the East Bay or in, like, the South
Bay
–
Yeah, if you can live in the middle of the city, I think it's great.
Yeah, if I was in San Francisco, I could do that. But, like, I lived in the South Bay. I didn't really care for it. It was just really expensive.
I feel the same way about San Francisco the way I kind of do about New York City, where it's like, okay, this is nice to visit, but I would not want to live here. It's too urban. Like, it's just too, like,
hard to have a car.
It has to be walkable. Like, everything has to be walkable because you can't, like, you're not parking anywhere anytime. And it's just insanely expensive. So
I think Bay Area would be lower for me.
Yeah, I'd probably go Eugene is up there.
The Oregon schools are interesting for me. They would probably be in the middle.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's not Seattle. Like, if I was in Portland, that'd be one thing.
Yeah.
Is there a school that you okay? So USC and UCLA are out of it. Is there a school you wouldn't want to root for? Like, I don't think
I don't think I could stomach rooting for Stanford.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I don't think I could do it. I don't think I could handle it at all.
I was gonna say that my sister is like. went to USD, University of San Diego. She would come up to USC games and stuff. And she just, the only team she hated was Stanford. She's like, I hate that tree. I hate that Stanford.
Like, I hate the tree, but I also like, I hate the idea of Stanford, you know?
But if you were Stanford, like they'd be like, you could just look your, you know, down your nose at people and stuff. That'd be kind
of
fun.
I hate the idea of it.
All right. I think we got that one pretty good. He said, second, which teams do you have the most and least animosity towards? Please rank the teams of the Pac-12 by which teams you consider your most to least hated rivals.
Most animosity. So I don't really feel a ton for anybody. Stanford's probably number one for me.
Yeah, it's probably just like what we were just talked about. It would say like Stanford's kind of the meh.
Yeah.
Everyone else is like, Oregon could get a little chippy sometimes.
Yeah,
you know?
Oregon's got some fans who who make it a struggle. I would say least animosity, I would say I enjoy Washington fans. I enjoy Utah fans. Colorado fans, I feel sad for you. So I appreciate you too. Arizona fans can get a little bit, you know, it's a struggle. They're living in the desert. I try not to blame them too much. I don't really have much of a problem with ASU fans. They seem, you know,
yeah,
fine. Stanford and Cal fans, I think the seven of them combined, the five of them were Cal fans in the early 2000s were really obnoxious, but they've since gone away. USC fans, like, I don't know. I mean, the rivalry is what it is, but also, you know, a bunch of my friends are USC fans. So it's like, oh, whatever.
You're going to, when the Death Star comes in, you're going to feel differently because they've been bad for a while.
So that's the thing is like, the Carroll years, the answer would have been obvious and easy. So if Lincoln Riley does, if somehow it doesn't get blown up over Endor this coming season, it could get really obnoxious very quickly. Like if you've got all the USC fans, like because it's not like the hardcore of USC fandom that has been winnowed down to this like hardcore. It is not actually too dissimilar from the hardcore of UCLA fans who have been winnowed down over the last like 15, 20 years. But it's when you add the like. The others, like the ones who are like the front runner, because the thing is, USC when it's good attracts the Laker fan, and fan is nobody you want. You don't want Laker fan doing anything because they are the most obnoxious people in the entire world. Nice. And that's what's going to happen if USC gets good again. They'll have Laker fan in droves.
Yeah. Well, then when they were good, then there was no NFL teams too. So just sort of like they filled a void.
No, but it's the Laker and Dodger fan, like the ones who are just like, yeah, go Dodgers, and they don't know like anybody on the team, but they're just like they like to yell at sports.
Yeah.
They'll start coming to the Coliseum again.
Yeah. And he says, finally, if you were stuck in a desert island on a desert island with only a shopping cart full of one product from Trader Joe's for sustenance, what would you choose? Let's assume you have access to water on the island to keep it more interesting. Thanks and keep up the work, Jared.
I don't know Trader Joe's offerings that well.
First time writer, and he says keep up the work. So, I mean, he's listened.
He knows what he's doing.
Okay, so I was thinking about this. Unfortunately, like, so if we're on a, you know, we're on an island, like, I don't have an oven. Like, we're not, like, microwaving anything. We're not, like, you know, cooking any of the frozen, like, goodies from Trader Joe's. And if I only have one shopping cart, I assume we're not getting saved, right? So
correct.
I'm picking the peanut butter cups because I just want to eat like good stuff before I'm going to die. Like whatever it was, if it was a cart full of steaks, like it's only going to last so long. I'd rather just eat like peanut butter cups until.
Yeah, or like chocolate covered cherries or something.
Yeah.
Like just go ham. What the hell? You only live once.
I'm not gonna live
once, and you're gonna die.
Yeah, I'm gonna die. I'm gonna eat like snacks on the whole way out. You know.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Jared.
That was good. All right. Next up, we've got Peter in Vancouver. Gentlemen, this is Power Five non-conference games. Gentlemen, last year, Pac-12 schools played 11 games against Power Five and Notre Dame schools. I sent in an email saying that I thought the Pac-12 would be lucky to be 4-7 in those games, while Ryan responded saying he thought it would be more like 5-5 or 6-5. Unless I'm mistaken, the Pac-12 went 3-8 in those games, and they didn't do well in bowl games against Power 5 opponents to make up for it. This year, the Pac-12 also plays 11 games against Power 5 schools, including Notre Dame. When I look at the list this year, I think that the Pac-12 will be lucky to match last year's record. And from listening to your podcast earlier this month, when you went over the projected win totals for each team, it seems that you are in agreement. To remind everyone, that's TCU at Colorado, Oregon versus Georgia, Utah at Florida, Mississippi State at Arizona, Arizona State at Oklahoma State, Colorado at Minnesota, Washington State at Wisconsin, Michigan State at UW, Cal at Notre Dame, Stanford at Notre Dame at USC. And that doesn't include the two games that the Pac-12 schools play against BYU, which, as you may remember, went 5-0 in the Pac-12 last year. Since BYU is playing at Oregon, maybe there's a chance that a Pac-12 school will finally get a win, right? Since we're on the subject, I'll point out that this is the first time since 2015 that Washington State has played a Power 5 opponent in a non-conference game. That year they played at Rutgers, and the year they this year they play at Wisconsin. Likewise, Utah is playing a Power 5 opponent, Florida, for the first time in a non-conference game since 2015 when they played Michigan. Peter in Vancouver.
Hey, Peter, I didn't look and see the 3-8 thing if that's correct, but that's tough because one of those wins is Oregon at Ohio State, and one of them's LSU at UCLA. I mean, there's like two pretty big ones to start off, and then I think just things fell off a cliff after that, right? Like, no one beat Notre Dame.
All right, well, let's do this really quick.
Can you do it? Can you look it up?
No, let's do this really quick. I'm not looking shit up.
Okay.
Out of here. Right. TCU at Colorado?
TCU.
All right, so that's 0-1. Oregon versus Georgia in Atlanta.
Georgia.
0-2. Utah at Florida?
I kind of think Utah. Yeah.
1-2. Mississippi State at Arizona?
Mississippi State.
1-3. Arizona State at Oklahoma State?
Oklahoma State.
Colorado at Minnesota?
So Minnesota fired their offensive coordinator because he wasn't very good.
And Colorado hired him.
Yeah.
Minnesota. 1-5.
Yeah.
Washington State at Wisconsin? 1-6.
Yeah.
Michigan State at UW?
Michigan State's pretty good.
1-7.
Yeah.
Cal at Notre Dame? 1-8.
Yeah.
Stanford at Notre Dame, 1-9. Notre Dame at USC, 2-9. Go 2-9?
Sure.
Or 1-10.
I mean, I think there's enough.
It's at USC. That's the only reason I'm going 2-9.
Yeah.
If it was at Notre Dame, it would be 1-10.
Notre Dame's got a new coach and stuff too. So that like well, Cal the problem, if Cal's any good, like they might have a chance.
The problem for the league is that UCLA isn't carrying the banner and playing a Power 5 opponent in the non-conference. If they were, there'd be another win there, baby.
Chip's on a roll, man.
He won several non-conference games last year.
In one season.
Yeah.
After winning none.
Yes.
That was the funniest joke. Like, what was your favorite non-conference win for Chip Kelly in his tenure at UCLA? Wait, hasn't won one yet? Oh, okay. That's going to be bad. It'll be worse than... Well, we thought it would be 6-5 last year, and it wasn't. But there were some really wacky ones. The Pac-12 lost last year, man. That was a little crazy. But there was, you know, it's funny because the high-profile ones were pretty good, and then it just went
kablooey
downhill. And then obviously the bowl games sucked too. Okay, transfer portal upside from Frank in Sacramento. The biggest effect of the transfer portal will be on the best schools' depth charts. No longer will a power football program be able to stack great players on the 2 and 3 deep list. These players will leave to join other programs as potential starters, making for a more competitive college football landscape in the years ahead. Sure, but then you see like teams like Alabama getting somebody else's best player, you know, like... Mm-hmm.
I actually think it's more, I think the combination effect of the transfer portal plus NIL is actually going to smooth this whole transition out, because I think it's going to result in roughly the same thing happening that was already happening, which is generally stockpiling of talent, but also guys are still going to, because I think I've grown more optimistic in the last week or two about the potential for a lot of schools to get on board with NIL and spending a bunch of money on their football teams. So I think this is going to work itself out, and the money's going to be relatively equal. So guys are still going to be looking for places to play football.
Yeah.
So I think it's all going to be fine. I mean, the budgets for those SEC schools are still going to be bigger, which means that they're still going to be able to stockpile talent in a way that other schools aren't. But I think there's still going to be potential for, you know, other leagues and schools to build some juggernauts.
Yeah. All right. You want to do the next one?
Sure. Hey, boys. Thanks for the incredible info on the spring games. Kind of an off-topic questions for you guys this week, but how'd you guys meet? Any good stories on that? Cameron in Costa Mesa. Well, it was a late night at a bar on the wrong side of the tracks.
Where was it? No, it was like a recruiting event.
Yeah. Yeah. We were at some bullshit 7-on-7 thing.
But I think we had met and talked about something. And then I remember being at Redondo Union High School.
Yeah, but that was like, I mean, we'd met, I don't know, years before that. Like,
oh, then we did like the videos.
Yeah. And then
we did the videos in like the park in Westwood.
Yeah.
And people like loved it.
They loved our video. Just us sitting there looking stupid, like next to a playground and fucking Veteran and Wilshire.
Yes. And we did, yeah, so we did like recruiting videos. Like we both talked about various recruiting classes, and there were some, you know, some guys.
Yeah, it was the 2015 class.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
And then we were at, we were watching Mike Juarez, the great Mike Juarez at Redondo Union High School, doing some just workout. Like it was nothing. And we were both just filming it because USC and UCLA were both after him. He did nothing in college. Zero. UCLA got him, of course. And we were like, oh, you know, we should do a Pac-12 podcast. There really isn't one. And I think at that time, maybe Scout had started to like try the idea of pushing some podcast stuff, and there had been like maybe one other league had produced one, like one other group of publishers, I want to say. And then we said, okay, let's do a Pac-12 one. And then we started in whatever, July or August.
Yeah, that was good.
It was.
Was it 2015 we did?
It was 2015 when we started this thing.
Dang. Yeah, well, there's the origin story.
And then I moved to Georgia.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
We do have a voicemail. Let me play it for you real quick, even though I won't be able to hear it.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. I'm just kind of following up on the question from a week or so ago about the best and worst tailgate spots in the Pac-12. I was wondering, for you guys, what's your most favorite venue to work or cover a game at, and what's your least favorite venue to work or cover a game at? Thanks, guys.
All right, so Perk asked,
I read it.
Yeah, okay. What our favorite venues to cover a game at are. Well, I mean, from a like a just experience standpoint, Washington is hard to beat. That weird press box, like way above the stadium,
is tailgating.
It's exciting and fun. Food standpoint, I want to say Stanford's really good.
Stanford's got great food.
Yeah,
Utah's pretty good too.
Yeah. The worst is like, no question, the Rose Bowl and the Coliseum have been horrible for years.
Yeah.
To cover a game at.
Like box lunch things.
Yeah, it's just box lunch. The LA schools got very complacent in the 2000s when everyone else was upgrading their offerings for the media.
Yeah.
And the Rose Bowl, what I didn't like when they redid the press box is that they really sealed it off. So it's hard to, you don't get sound of the game very easily in there anymore.
Yeah.
The one thing I would note generally, and I don't have good examples, but like the Rose Bowl and a few others in the league, like the press box is so sealed that you can't even open a window to like get the ambiance of the stadium. So it feels like you're just watching it at home or like in a hyperbaric chamber. Like you're not hearing what's happening during the game. So that's always a drawback. But Stanford and Washington are both pretty good. Arizona's or whatever. Utah was pretty good.
Washington State upgraded a lot of their stuff, but like you're in the corner, like you're far away from, you're not in like the center anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a little tougher. I want to see, you know, Oregon State, what they, I don't know if that's the press box side they're deleted. I don't remember what they're, but they're upgrading stuff. I'm drawing a blank on like what Oregon's was like. I haven't been there for a while.
I've never been to that press box.
Yeah, I can't. Nothing's really standing out. But Stanford, like the pre-pandemic stuff, like they usually had the best spread. Like they were like going all out. Cal would have like colored M&Ms that were like for the teams. That was kind of fun.
Yeah.
And, like, I think some cookies and stuff. If you got like good sweets,
yeah,
I'm in.
But the Rose Bowl was horrible. The Rose Bowl was horrible for years and years and years. They had, when I was covering it with the Mora years, they would have Boston Market like sandwiches
or some shit,
but they would put them in a cooler of like actual ice, not like freeze bags, and then the ice would melt over the course of the day.
Wet the sandwiches.
And the sandwich would be wet. Like, it would just be, it would be wet bread in this sandwich that had only been in, like, a sandwich bag. So, you know, condensation and everything. So it was just wet, soaking wet bread. Which, if you've ever eaten a sandwich with soaking wet bread, like, just, and we're talking, like, wheat, white, like, just sliced bread. It's one of the most revolting experiences of anyone's life. But prior to that, the experience was actually even worse because they would have hot dogs, and that was it. that was the entire food offering.
Jeez.
And the hot dog was something that tasted as if it had been cooked already four times. Like just
like a
hard
skunked hot dog.
Just and like just wrapped in foil, but the foil had clearly been microwaved several times with the hot dog inside. Really just a tremendous culinary experience.
USC used to have like the same like pasta dish, and I think there was like hot dogs too. Like they just never changed it. It was always the same kind of crap. Then they went to like these box lunches. They actually, it's not, now it's not bad. They have like the hot meals, and they have decent cookies. It's not terrible now. Like it's better, but they got rid of like the terrible box. Like here's a box of things with chips and an apple in it and stuff that, yeah. But yeah, we'll have to now, you know, a lot of stuff the last couple of years too have been like pandemic-y. So it's like hard to.
Yeah. But now that the pandemic is over and no one's getting COVID anymore.
I'm free now, man. I'm like triple vaxxed and I had it. Like I can go out and do whatever the hell I want. Wow. That's what the CDC told me, I think.
Who knows? Who knows what they're telling anybody these days? Those crazy kids in the CDC.
I was like trying to
figure out. There was a time in the very recent past where the CDC was seen as like the preeminent, like best like disease control, like
really?
the like absolute pinnacle of the profession. Yeah.
Are they not good?
Well, I don't think you can say their performance during this whole escapade has been top notch.
No. I mean, there were some good things that happened, you know, like putting do not cross police tape over parks and shutting down beaches, arresting paddleboarders that are out there by themselves. Like those are all good things, you know.
If you're going to do all that stuff, then you got to do it. Like my whole thing from the very beginning of this is if you're going to do the lockdown thing, do it.
Yeah.
Like, but actually do it. Like, actually, like everyone's got to
like
stay
armed
home.
Armed guards like in Shanghai?
Not like armed guards, but like everyone is incentivized to stay home with money.
Yeah.
And we're going to like literally deliver food to your house and we're going to try to arrest this thing. Doesn't work if it's not global. Doesn't work if you're not doing it everywhere. But if you're going to do that, do that. But if you're not going to do that, if you're just going to do this weird gray middle ground, then you're going to lose buy-in very quickly, which is what happened here.
Yeah.
I would say the because that was the thing that CDC, I mean, I think the science, whatever, they were trying to, I think it was, they were trying to do the public health thing. And the public health thing is also like analyzing social dynamics, trying to read the room, trying to figure out how to message these things and all that other stuff. And I think they fucked that up at almost every juncture. Like at the beginning with the mask shit where they're like, oh, no, masks are not important. Completely derailed that whole argument for like so many people.
Right.
Like, for the longest period of time.
You already told me masks.
Because the thing is, like just a basic logic thing, putting some shit over my face probably reduces some level of the shit coming out of my mouth, right?
I would think it helps.
It helps in some way.
Yeah.
Like, and that,
it doesn't make
that
it worse. Should have been, it doesn't
project that should have been the argument from the beginning is this will help in some way. It's not going to prevent anything. It will help in some way. Do it because it's going to help in some way. And people would have said, that makes sense. I'll do that. But then it was, no, it doesn't work. And then it was like, oh, no, this is the end all be all. You just got to wear a mask. And then people were like, oh, okay. And then they put on the mask and they're wearing the mask and they're wearing the mask and the mask. And then you get in longer term and it's like, I don't want to wear this fucking thing anymore. And it you know, I've gotten mixed messaging on it. So does this even work? And then there's just this politicization of the argument. And it's just like, again, go back to basic common sense. If I put some shit over my mouth, it's going to prevent some percentage of the shit coming out of my mouth from going into other people's mouths. Correct?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is not, I am not a scientist.
No.
But, like, it's basic. Like, it's not even, like, science. It's just basic logic. There's wet shit that comes out of my mouth. If I put my hand over my mouth, that wet shit is going to be on my hand, right?
Yeah.
So if I put a mask over my mouth, that wet shit's going to be on, like, you don't have to, you just look at the inside of one of your masks after you wear it. There's wet shit in there.
Yeah.
If there's wet shit in the mask, it's working at some level. Because in that wet shit is some of the stuff that comes from inside of your body.
Yeah.
And if some of that stuff inside of your body is diseased, then now that wet shit, that percentage of the wet shit inside of your body doesn't get in other people's mouths.
Yeah.
This is infectious disease 101.
You know what I'm looking forward to tomorrow?
What?
Okay. I'm going to be in my house. Say I'm going to go down the street. I'm going to go get breakfast somewhere. I'm going to walk in, no mask, eat my breakfast, walk out, no mask. I don't have to like wear a mask on, sit down, put a mask, like with a mask, and then take my mask off, eat in front of everybody and do all that stuff, and then put it back on to walk out of the restaurant. So I don't have to do that. But I'm going to get like an Uber and go to the airport. But I'm going to put a mask on when I get on the Uber because LA County says I need to put a mask on. I'm going to get outside. I'm going to not have a mask on, which will be good. I'm going to go into the airport. I'm going to put a mask on while I'm in the airport. So when I like check my luggage or get my ticket, whatever it is, I need the mask on to go through security, mask on, mask on, mask on. I'm going to get on the plane and I can take the mask off because in the plane.
So here's the thing. Are you gonna take it off on the plane?
If I wear, like, maybe that's the thing. I will probably wear it just because I had it on, but I might take it off just because I want to take off my mask on a plane just because I haven't done that for a long time. And I just had COVID, so I don't give a shit. But like,
but the thing is with the just had COVID is you might, I mean, I'm doing this stupid thing with you in the room, but you might still be like mildly infectious. And the whole point of the mask is not necessarily like, you know,
right. I think the infectious part is early. And then like I waited longer than CDC said. I waited until like actually tested negative.
You know what I realized recently about the cold? Because like this made me like reevaluate a lot of my priors about infectious disease. Do you know when you have a cold? Do you know how long you're infectious?
Huh.
The entire fucking time you have symptoms. Even when you're like at the very end and you've just got that cough that's still remaining because you think it's just like
you're
the
still
post-nasal
infectious?
Drip. You are still infectious. You can be infectious for weeks with a cold. Weeks. So anyway, my point is though, but you're gonna do that. And the thing is, like, if you had messaged this correctly from the beginning, which is, yeah, wear your mask as much as you can, because the more you wear it, the less you're going to cause problems for other people.
Yeah.
The less
and protect, like, yourself potentially.
You're gonna protect yourself to an extent, but you're also gonna cause fewer problems for everyone else. And it's not like if you wear it. Because the thing is, like, it's not discordant with that idea to wear it in certain situations and not in others. Like, putting on the mask when you're in the Uber, okay, and then taking it off when you go outside and then putting it back on for the airport and then taking it off for the plane, you're still being safer. Like, you're still helping, to some extent, the other people around you.
Yeah.
More than you would be if you just didn't wear a mask the entire time. And I think it's just, it's talking to people as if they're like just stupid idiots and they don't want to help anybody that's the part where I think it gets a little bit too into political theory about people rather than just try to appeal to like people's basic common sense and like, you know, appreciation of their fellow people. Wear a mask because it will help to some extent removing the stupid shit that comes out of your mouth from other people's mouths.
Yeah. I think you have a heart out in like a minute. We talked all about like.
We got one last question.
Is there only one?
Yeah. I think it's just this text message.
There's two text messages.
I've only got one. We already read the other one.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it's this big one from Choney.
Oh, okay.
All right. Choney19. For years, David was vocal about looser transfer rules and players being compensated for their play with the transfer portal and NIL. Is this what you envisioned, and what is your opinion about where we are and where we're going with this and the health of college sports? I think it's great. I've revised my opinions after the initial thing where I was a little taken aback. No, it's awesome. It's awesome. When I read that Oklahoma was going to give $50,000 to every single player on the roster, that's so cool.
Nice.
I love it.
Good for them.
I love every bit of it.
All right.
At Ryan, you camp a lot at Catalina, and I always wondered if you could give details on the pluses and minuses as well as which campgrounds you go to, as it's something I'd like to do this summer, and it's easier to ask you than research it myself.
Real quick. Yeah. I mean, I like all of the spots. If you like being on the water, and depending on how much hiking you want to do, Parsons Landing is probably the coolest one, but that's like a legit hike to get out there. You got to carry all your stuff. So that's like carry stuff on your back. You can go to Little Harbor, which also can be on the water, and they do a gear haul there. So you could do like a light hike from two harbors, like a 7 mile hike, and then they could bring coolers of beer and steaks or whatever you want. So those are good ones. But it's not cheap to camp there, and you got to like book those places early, but try to find good spots on the website. If you got anything on the water, Shark Harbor is great in the Little Harbor. There's only like three campsites that are actually on the water. Check those out.
All right. And then three, can we explore a meetup with POC listeners for beers at a local bar? I propose May 14th at noon. You guys just have to show up and propose the bar.
May 14th at noon? What's that?
That's a Saturday at noon.
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
I'd be in.
I could do it.
I could do noon on a Saturday is beautiful and perfect for me.
My mom will be in town. You guys could meet Mama Abraham.
Yeah. My kids are doing a swim lesson at 10 a.m., but that will end at 10:30.
So perfect.
I'm good.
All right. Well, maybe we'll do that.
All right. Four. I know if you heard, Ryan, but Dave is now full-time at Bruin Report Online. Does that mean he will take on more of the editing responsibilities here at the POC?
If anything, it means he should do more.
Fewer. Fewer. It will be fewer hours.
He's actually doing this for a living, so he should be doing more of this.
Yeah, yeah, it will be fewer hours actually spent on this, and my schedule will be much tighter. Five, Dave and Tracy also joked about switching with you and your team next April 1st, where they do an episode of the Peristyle podcast and you and your team do an episode of the Brocast. Are you in?
I mean, first of all, you can't announce your...
Correct.
Yeah, like you can't announce your April Fool's jokes. We did one with the Reign of Troy people, like one time.
That's not as fun, though. I think it'd be really funny if I was trying to talk about like the ins and outs of like USC football recruiting.
Yeah.
Like if I would have to do like Gerard's like segment. I think I'd really enjoy that.
Okay. I'll just go through the top players in California and say sources are saying that UCLA is winning all of these guys.
I would just do a Gerard impression the entire time.
That's good.
All right. Six. Can you two simply name the best unit by position in the Pac-12? No.
No.
Out of your mind? Have you been listening to this show?
It's really tough. After watching the spring games.
No one's good.
Yeah.
Seven, would you ever rather have to deal with more rabid fans like in the SEC versus the more casual fans of the Pac-12?
Get a lot more listeners, so yeah.
Yeah, I think I would love the engagement. I mean, there's
probably get paid.
The thing is with the SEC is you've got a lot of fan bases that are like USC at its peak, and I already told you what I thought about USC at its peak. You get a lot of fan bases that are just like, because when I talk about like the hardcore of a fan base, it's the people who they appreciate their school being shitty right now. Like they appreciate the value of like following a shitty program. So like I don't find USC fans who are still around at this point that obnoxious because they've been through some shit. I don't find UCLA fans who've been around, like even the ones who are like completely discordant from me in opinion, because shit, man, you stuck around. You stuck around through some shit. SEC fans haven't had any of that. And so you've got so many fans in those groups who are just obnoxious assholes.
And you just don't have like the, you know, a whole state. There's not like a Arkansas in the Pac-12 where like literally the entire state,
roots
all they have is the Arkansas Razorbacks. Like that's what they care about. Like if you're in Salt Lake City, like, yeah, there's a lot of Utah fans, but there's a lot of other stuff that's going on. And, you know, you're in Boulder, like, you know, there's a shitload of Broncos fans. Like you could say, you know, there's just. Yeah, that's kind of a unique thing in the SEC where there's just like whole regions or states that root for your program because they don't have anything else there.
Yep. And then eight, if you could cover any other team outside of the Pac-12, which would it be and why?
Outside the Pac-12. It's like, where would I want to live? I think I would live in Austin. I like that. Like I could cover Texas.
I was going to go Texas too. All right, so different answer. Geez. There aren't too many other places I would want to live. Like, you think about it, and it's like, Austin's
like
fine.
Like Miami?
Yeah, but I don't want to live in Miami.
You don't want to live in Miami?
No. I think I'd pick something like, I don't know, Nashville?
Cover like Vanderbilt? You want to cover Vanderbilt?
That'd be kind of funny.
I mean, you could do, like, Georgia and, like, live. Could you live in Atlanta?
Yeah, I mean, you could live in Atlanta, cover in Athens.
Old Miss, you could do that, like, because that's like an hour
and
a half.
Yeah, but I don't want to live in Oxford.
No, but you could live in Atlanta. It's like an hour and a half or something.
Yeah, it's
I guess that's too tough.
Yeah, it's a long one. That's tough. There aren't, like, because there aren't too many places in the South I would want to live, and that's where most of the, like, fun football to cover is.
How about, like, LSU?
Yeah, that would maybe be, but then again, you're also in Baton Rouge. I guess you could commute in from New Orleans. But also living in Louisiana, I think would take between 15 and 25 years off my life.
You'd have like beignets every morning.
Yeah, and I'd be just, I mean, I know myself well enough to know that
could you have an alcoholic beverage?
I would develop an alcohol problem.
Like
not for like any like deep-seated psychological reason, just because it's here. Okay.
Hurricane for
this
breakfast.
This is what you do here.
You'd like wake up at Pat O'Brien's like 3 days a week, like, oh, did I stay over again?
Jean Lafitte's. Yeah. But yeah, that'd be fun.
Is there any place like on the like Atlantic, the seaboard, like any?
That's the thing, is there's nothing really that good up there that you would, I don't know, that would be enjoyable to cover on
like
top
Durham,
of.
Durham, like those are like inland, right?
They're not inland. Like, I mean, you could do.
If you were like in Charleston, like there's no school there, right? Like,
there's nothing. And so it's just a whole lot of nothing. Mostly up.
I want to be on the ocean, or I want to be.
I don't want to go upper Midwest, and I don't want to go south. And if you don't want to do either of those two things, there's really limited options for football.
Like if you had to, like Columbus is kind of cool, but like you're in a freaking Ohio, you know?
You're in Ohio,
but it's like it's a city. Like it's kind of like Austin-y, I think, like city wise.
I mean, I guess you could do like the Chicago local stuff. You could do like Northwestern. Yeah, but, like, I don't even like Chicago that much.
Chicago's fine, but
it's
like,
fine, but it's not like,
yeah, I don't like, oh, I want to be in the big city of Chicago. Yeah,
people love Chicago, and I don't go gaga over it.
You could do Boston College, like you know, but I don't want to go back.
Anyway, I guess I'm not moving anywhere.
Nice.
That's basically what I just said.
Well, we went 7 minutes past his drop dead deadline, mostly talking about COVID and where we'd want to live. So that's a show. I mean,
whenever I can message public health 2 years after the point where it would have mattered, I've got to do it, you know?
But to be fair, you were saying that from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Like, well, I didn't know what the hell was going on. Now you can look back and go, they shut down the beaches. Like, they literally arrested a guy who was body surfing by himself. Like, he's by himself in the ocean. Like, he couldn't be more isolated from society. And you said, don't do that, sir. So, like,
well, it's, I think it was because the centralized messaging was just that bad. Like, emphasize the things that matter. Because the thing is, wearing the masks matters. And it matters just because of the reduced percentage risk. Like, wear it as much as you can. Wear it as much as you can tolerate. Because that's what you need to do.
It might be like 50% better or 5% better.
Doesn't
or
matter. It'll be better. It'll be somewhat better. But like emphasize people's, you know, general goodwill to their fellow person and see if that works instead of trying to lie to them and then not lie to them and then.
And mandate everything.
And mandate like, everything. It's just, you know, try to appeal to, because you've got to use the like our national mythology to your advantage. Yeah. You know, we're all these independent thinkers. Okay, well, independent thinkers, here's do some independent thought on this.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. I thought it was a great show. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Top tier. Love it. I got to take a nap for about half an hour, so that was really great.
Give me two donuts and I am good.
Yeah.
Boom. I'm COVID-free. I'm full of donuts. I'm excited. All right. Well, that is David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham, and we are the Podcast of Champions, talking all things epidemiology and Pac-12 football. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.